every game, you'll see a player argue with an umpire, and I've never seen an umpire change his mind ever. So why would you waste your time? Has that ever worked? You ever see a guy sliding into home? You're out! You're crazy, man! He missed a tag! I had my hand. Okay, safe. Huh? I don't like conflict. I tend to shy away from that. Go ahead, give him a run. No, it's okay. I didn't know about the yelling. It's okay. Give it to him. Baseball has interesting traditions. Why do baseball coaches wear uniforms? Imagine a hockey coach on the sidelines wearing full goalie gear. Give it your all, fellas. Who's the guy in the goalie mask? So why is it normal in baseball? They look silly, especially the ones who have put on a few pounds, sitting in the dugout, pinstripes this far apart. Looks like somebody made a jailbreak out of his torso. I think I might pinch run today. I'll just sit here and eat Funyuns.
Bus stop where day she's there, I say, Michelle, my umbrella. Bus stop, bus go, she stays, love grows.
At WRJN Radio. I'm Don Rosen. Thanks for joining us here. My good friend, old dear buddy, from 50 plus years ago. Yeah, that's when we first met, 50 some odd years ago. Took me to my first boxing match, my only boxing match he took me to. Randy Gordon is here. Hi, Randy.
Don, I can't believe we were children when we first met. But the thing is, we each had dreams that we talked to each other about, and I think we've each realized those dreams, and I think everybody listening to us should just realize that dreams come true for you, for me, and I think anybody who can possibly dream, which is all of us. If we want something bad enough, we can get it.
When I first met Randy, it was at radio station WGBB on Long Island. He came on as a part-time announcer. And I said, yeah, hire this guy. I talked to the program director, Bob Lawrence. I said, you got to hire this guy. I said, well, you're going to have to work with him. I said, well, in that case, don't hire him. No, but I did work with Randy. And for me to get promoted, he had to take the shift I was getting. I was leaving, so I had to make sure that he could do it. And it was on Sunday mornings you worked. And he always wanted to be into boxing. And I'm going to shorten the story, then we're going to go back and tell the whole story. But Randy went on to work for wrestling and boxing magazines in Freeport, New York. He worked for he used to write stories for the boxing magazines. Then he went on to become a commentator on ESPN television doing boxing. He boxed himself for a very, very short time. And then went on to become the New York State Boxing Commissioner, went on to become the New York State Athletic Commissioner, and went on to have his own show on Sirius XM Radio, where he still has it today. And he manages a boxer. So, and you're older than I am. Not by much, but you're older than I am. And you keep adding stuff into your life. Most people are starting to retire and spread things out and get away from them. You keep piling on, and you're like the Energizer Bunny. You just keep on going, and, you know, nothing stops you. And I'm so proud of you. You are the Cinderella story I talk about all the time because you wanted to be into boxing, and you're not a big guy. I mean, you're not, you know, 6 foot tall boxer, and you made it. You did everything you wanted to do. You were in the ring. I was at your only fight. I went to that fight at the Nassau, I think it was the Nassau Coliseum, right? Your only fight. You got knocked out, but still, I was so proud of you. I was so proud of you. Got in that ring, round two, pow, right in the face, and he went down. You know, I forget what boxer it was, but one of the big heavyweight champions said, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face.
Mike Tyson said it.
Mike Tyson, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face. But let's start off with your career. You were born in New York, in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah.
But I didn't know this about you. I think I may have heard it one time or another, but I forgot. You were in a gas explosion and got burned. What happened with that?
Yeah, to me, that's set the whole, everything in motion. I was 10 years old, and there was, my father was burning my old baby carriage, the frame, which was rusted. He was getting it off, and he couldn't get the bolts loose, so he decided to burn off the part where the baby lays in there, the carriage part. So I was standing 10 feet away from the flames next to the gasoline, but the wind was blowing from where I was towards the fire, and the fumes carried into the flames. The flames jumped all the way back 10 feet into the can, blew the can up, and I was burned severely on my right leg, where I was in the hospital for 4 months. I was in a wheelchair for 1 year, and that was in 1959. I was 10 years old, and it was on my birthday in March of 1960 that I was now 11 years old, and I just had come back from dinner with my parents, and my mom was playing chess with me, and I was in a wheelchair, so I couldn't do much. And my father said, "Hey, you want to watch the fights they're on tonight?" "Fights? What are the fights?" And he puts on the fights, and I see these two guys dancing around in the ring. And all I could think of was, geez, I wish I could move like that, but I'm wheelchair bound. But I was so mesmerized with this ballet, which I now, you know, of course, it's my lifeblood, but boxing is a ballet with bruises. And I said, I'm gonna do this. And because of that, it inspired me to get out of the wheelchair and try to stand up and emulate these guys, who later on in life, both fighters, became friends of mine. And in fact, one of them, many of the listeners may remember his name, Emil Griffin.
Yes, Emil. Yeah, I know him. I heard of him, yeah.
And Emil, later on in life, I went on to manage a heavyweight by the name of James Bone Crusher Smith. And Emil was my trainer for Bone Crusher Smith, and we took him to the heavyweight championship of the world. And, you know, whoever would have thought that just as a fight fan, I am now managing the heavyweight champion of the world. Everything I've done in my life from that burn, which just so inspired me, is everything that's happened is because I was inspired from my horrific accident.
Wow. So, and that's how you got started. Your dad made you watch the TV show, and you got up, you walked, you became a boxing manager. Now, that's what year are we talking there?
Well, boy, you know, the burn occurred in 1959. I'm 10 years old, you know, of course. Then I went to finished elementary school, finished high school on Long Island, and went to college, where I wanted to do one of two things. One was be a sportscaster, a sports writer, and I wanted to cover boxing, which is eventually, you know, what I did. But then I also wanted to be an airline pilot like my dad. And I was taking flying lessons, and I was letting the bills rack up. And one day, in about 1970, 71, I said, "Dad, I owe the flight lesson company, I owe them about $800. Can you please help me out?" He said, "Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pay the bill. But from now on, you decide if you're going to be a pilot, I'll pay for your flight school. If you're going to be a sportscaster, I'm going to pay for your college. But if you're going to be a sportscaster, I'm going to pay for your college. Flying is your hobby. You pay for your hobby." So I continued my hobby for a little while, but it got so expensive that I did actually get up, and I soloed in a Cessna 150. But it turns out that I gave one of my friends, I said, "You got to come up for your first lesson. It's free." He took it, and he lives somewhere out in Wisconsin, and he just retired as a captain for Delta Airlines.
Okay.
So, I mean, things happen. But then I went off in the direction of college, journalism, broadcast communications, that kind of stuff. And here we are all these years later still doing it.
Well, when I met you, you came to work for the radio station. No sports whatsoever. It was just, you know, radio announcing, and it was a top 40 station, and that was about it. And eventually you worked overnights there, I think, for a while. You worked Sunday mornings, I remember that. And then you went on to be a writer. I think first, wasn't it Wrestling Magazine first before you went to Boxing Magazine? Was it Wrestling?
No, it was a publishing company called GC London Publishing. And they put out a series of wrestling magazines and boxing magazines. And the boxing magazines were Big Book of Boxing, World Boxing, International Boxing. But they also put out The Wrestler, Inside Wrestling. They even put out something called Apartment House Wrestling, which there's probably a lot of fans out there. I cannot believe how many wrestling fans there are.
We have one.
As a matter of fact.
Wait, I got to stop you right there. We have a guy, Rich LoCascio, here. He works at the radio station here. Nobody on this planet is a bigger wrestling fan than he is. This guy, he lives wrestling. He does wrestling announcing at local events here. You know, where they bring the microphone down and, you know, you do the introduce. Now in this corner, weighing 500 pounds, Haystacks Calhoun. You know, he does all. And he is the biggest wrestling fan in the world. His life is wrestling. So, yes, there are big wrestling fans.
Well, it turns out that my first producer at Sirius XM Radio in 2007, I'm doing my very first, I did an MMA show for 2 years before I was given a boxing show. And my very first producer, his name is Dave LaGreca. Dave LaGreca, turns out, is the biggest wrestling fan in the world. And I sat with him and I said, Dave, you know, you're such a wrestling fan. We don't even have a wrestling show here. You're so good. You should be doing a wrestling show. He speaks to the president of sports. He said, okay, I'll let you try it. They are on, I think, 7 days a week on Sirius. I might be wrong. It might be 6 days. It's called Busted Open. It is Sirius XM's, one of their top five shows on their entire, I mean, you know, of course they got Howard Stern and they got Mad Dog and they've got NASCAR radio. The Busted Open show, I only wish my boxing show was as popular.
Hold on,
they have popularity that I just cannot believe.
Hold on one second, Randy. Got a quick break here. We're back with Randy Gordon, former New York State Athletic Commissioner, and now on Sirius XM Radio. More coming up in just a moment here. WRJN, Hometown Radio, Refreshed. WRJN Radio, a civic media station, Hometown Radio, Refresh, with my good buddy Randy Gordon. We're talking about his career in boxing. And by the way, in the wrestling magazine, I was immortalized. I was the ringside doctor, Dr. Don Rosen. Remember that?
Of course. You know, we would make up these stories. And it turns out, you know, the wrestlers didn't care because all their matches are basically scripted and everything. We all know that. But I also, we put out a magazine which all these years later, when Dave LaGreca from Busted Open, he asked me one day, he said, okay, you guys put out Wrestler. He said, I read your column all the time. And he said, did you put out the Apartment House Wrestling magazines? I said, yes. He said, what was that about? Because it was just females in bathing suits, and they were apparently fighting. Well, it was basically my creation. I said to my boss, if you put out a magazine like this, I think you're going to sell a lot of magazines. And it was more or less softcore porn.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and but it was nothing. It was these models that we would hire, and then we would set up, we would take our office, and we'd get some carpeting, and we made it look like an apartment. And the girls would then just pose in a chokehold, pulling the hair and this and that. After we had a million pictures, I would sit down and one of the other two or three writers, we would make up a scenario why they were fighting. They were fighting for some executive secretary position. But we didn't just sell a few magazines. It made my boss a multi-millionaire, and he was so thrilled that he would give us big Christmas bonuses and everything because of the apartment house wrestling. Not so much the sale of the wrestling magazines or the boxing magazines, which were great. It was the apartment house wrestling, which was selling. And Dave LaGreca went crazy when he found out that I'm the one who started the apartment house wrestling and you know, was the chief writer for Apartment House Wrestling. I think I even still have one or two of those magazines here. I kind of hid them from the kids.
You know, I remember where your offices were when you worked for the boxing and wrestling magazines. It was right above the Department of Motor Vehicles in Freeport, New York.
Yeah.
I used to watch the people online in the freezing cold going to the DMV. Didn't you tell me you would taunt them online when they're out there in the cold?
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, we had a coffee machine upstairs, and sometimes there might be people out there for a long time. We would come down and just bring them coffee because we saw how cold they were. I cannot believe all these years later, you remember exactly where my office was, and it was above the DMV. Oh, my God. You can see that your synapses are still working.
Okay, it's right about this time when you worked at the radio station with me. You decided you're going to get into the ring and box. And you were the opening on the top of the card at the Nassau Coliseum, which is at the time where the New York Nets played and the Long Island, the New York Islanders hockey team.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of concerts there, big name concerts, and they did boxing there. And you were going to get into the ring, and all the people at the radio station, we all showed up in the seats to watch you box. It lasted two rounds. What happened?
Well, it turns out the guy's name was Gerard Odom. He was a last-second replacement, and I weighed 122 pounds. I don't know why I did this. I trained on yogurt. I ate yogurt for breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, and everything. Yogurt, yogurt, and yogurt. And I cut down. I was as skinny as a rail. And it turned out that my original opponent, the guy's name was Seymour Shepherd. Seymour got sick. He couldn't make the fight, so they quickly reached out and they found this Long Island truck driver by the name of Gerard Odom. Well, Gerard showed up late for the weigh-in. The commission just said, you know what, just get on the scale. What do you weigh? So his guy said, he weighs 128. When he got into the ring, he took his robe off, and I looked across the ring and I said, 128? My butt. He doesn't weigh 128. Well, it turned out the bell rang. We came out. I rocked him in the first round, a couple jabs, stung him. And I really thought that I was going to get this guy. And then in the second round, the same thing was happening. And all of a sudden, he stepped in with a big right hand to the chin. And that's all I remember.
I remember when you got hit.
Well, that wasn't the one that put me down. And the films later show that I do get hurt by that first right hand. But then he stepped in with a perfectly timed right uppercut, right up the middle, under my chin. You know, my head snaps. I go down. And the next thing I know, I'm looking at the ceiling of the Nassau Coliseum.
We thought you were dead. Were all the people in the radio station, oh, my goodness, he's dead. You were laying there so lifeless.
Well, I mean, there were some who might have rooted for that, but no, we survived that. But, you know, later, right after the fight, I saw him in the dressing room. And I go over and I congratulate him, and he gives me a hug. And I said, Gerard, let me ask you something. They announced your weight at 128 pounds. You don't weigh 128, do you? And he shook his head no. I said, what do you weigh? And then he looked around to see if anybody was listening, and he goes, 138. Now, in boxing, they have weight classes for a reason. This guy was four weight classes above me. 122-pounders do not fight 138-pounders. I was what they call a super bantamweight. Then after super bantamweight, then there's featherweight, super featherweight, lightweight, and super lightweight. He was a super lightweight. That fight should have never taken place. But it did, and I'm 0-1, and that's the way it is.
0-1. We were at that fight. We all thought you were dead. I said, oh, my goodness, he's down. It was the second round. And you took, I remember the punch, and you just flew down to the ground, and you were, it was lifeless. I was frightened for you. We're talking to Randy Gordon, my good buddy here. After the break here, we're going to talk about, after he worked for Ring Magazine, going to ESPN, took me to my first fight. I think it was in Queens, right? You took me to some seedy arena.
Sunnyside Gardens.
Yeah, Sunnyside Gardens. Yeah, it was kind of seedy. I thought.
Exactly. It was so seedy. It was beautiful.
Yeah, that wasn't beautiful. Yeah, I'll tell you about my first, and only, other than Randy's Matt, only Randy's Gordon's fight. This was the only fight I ever been to. I'll tell you about that coming up in a moment. Randy Gordon, my good buddy here, former New York State Athletic Commissioner, joining us this morning on WRJN Radio, 729. Hometown Radio Refreshed, a civic media station. WRJN Radio. I'm Don Rosen. My good buddy Randy Gordon is here. The former New York State Athletic Commissioner, former ESPN commentator, and now on Sirius XM, and manages a stable. Actually, more one boxer, soon to be a stable. But before we go any further, I got to tell people about the only, other than Randy's knockout, where he was knocked out in the second round, other than that, I was at one other boxing match, and you took me there, Sunnyside Gardens in Queens, New York. And this was a seedy. This is the gym you always see in these old 1940s movies, the seedy, seedy play. And remember, we sat up front, and every time the guy got punched, I got hit with sweat. And I said, oh, this is disgusting. This is gross.
Well, you know, it's funny. They made a lot of different. They did some movie shoots out of Sunnyside Garden. And it lasted until about until the 80s. And then the wrecking ball came in, and what did they put up? A fast food hamburger joint.
Oh.
So I said, you know what? Fighters who have always been treated like meat, well, here it is. Fast food hamburger restaurant to replace Sunnyside Garden. A shame.
Before we get to Rich Lacasio's now, by he's the biggest wrestling fan in the world. We'll talk to Rich, and you can talk to him in just a second. I want to talk about after when you were at Ring Magazine. How did you get involved with ESPN TV?
Well, it turned out Ring is such a big name that all of a sudden I went from G.C. London Publishing Company, from the smaller boxing magazines, the very popular ones, that when Bert Randolph Sugar bought Ring Magazine, along with former New York Nick Dave DeBuscher, they hired me to be the editor-in-chief. And once I became the editor-in-chief of Ring, everybody's looking at this new face, if you will, as the editor-in-chief of the historic Ring Magazine. And along came this fledgling cable television station, and they hired me. They said, we're going to be doing a lot of boxing and Australian rules football. And you're the boxing expert. Would you like to try out? And I did. And when we used to go on from, let's say, Atlantic City, we used to have to come on and say, live on the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network. And then they shortened it to ESPN.
They were out of Connecticut, I think. Weren't they out of Connecticut?
Oh, they still are. But when I started back in 1980, we worked out of a trailer, out of a large trailer that had separate rooms in it with televisions, and, you know, the producer would sit there and everything like that. Now, it's in Bristol, Connecticut, and when you approach it, there's all surrounding farms, and you're driving up, and you're seeing the cows and the pigs out there and everything else. And then all of a sudden, you turn this corner, and you look, and there's this rising structure. That's Bristol, Connecticut. That's ESPN Studios. And they are the most spectacular studios in all of television. So go figure. I started right at the very beginning.
But then you went to MSG, which is Madison Square Garden television.
Yeah, I mean, right from ESPN, all of a sudden everybody was after me, and I signed with the Madison Square Garden Network. I signed with the USA Network, and the contract allowed me to do both. So I was announcing for MSG's boxing, and I was doing the USA. I started the Tuesday night fights with Al Albert, and I did that until 1988, when all of a sudden, out of the clear blue sky, the governor of New York, Mario Cuomo, gives me a call, and that changed the whole direction of my career.
And that call was to make you the chairman of the New York State Athletic Commission, right?
That's what it was, and I thought it was a joke. And Don, you know, over the years, you know, I could call you up, and I could call you as Muhammad Ali, I could call you as Howard Cosell or whatever. And many times, my friends and I would do this. We would joke with each other. So I get a call, and secretary, I hear the female voice say, Mr. Gordon, okay, can you hold on for Governor Mario Cuomo, please? And I'm like, what? So, okay, this is a new one. So the voice gets on, and, hello, Randy, this is Governor Mario Cuomo. And with a silence on the phone, he said, hello, Randy. And I said, yes, who is this?
Yeah, really, who are you?
And I truly didn't believe it. I said, whoever this is, you are doing one hell of an impersonation of Mario Cuomo. And, you know, because who expects to get called by the governor of their state? Especially somebody as powerful as Mario Cuomo. And he actually had to have me come up to the World Trade Center. He was in Building 1 in the summer of 1988 to meet him, to believe that it was really him. And finally, when I walked into his office, the door opens, and I stepped into his big office, and he comes walking over to me. He said, you still don't think it's me? And I just was, I was speechless. But we became real good friends, and he swore me in and everything a few weeks later up in the Senate chamber in Albany, New York, the capital of New York. And I got my badge. I have never turned my badge in. And I think the only thing I'm going to do one day, if it ever happens that I'm inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame, then they can have my badge. But until then, it stays here, and I got 12 grandkids. Maybe one day one of them would just like to put it on their wall. But yeah, it was 1988 to 1995. I served as the boxing commissioner for the state of New York.
Wait a second. Then in 1990, you became the president of the Association of Boxing Commissioners. The whole shooting works.
Yeah, I mean, as the boxing commissioner in New York, I was the most outspoken and visible commissioner out there. And we had started an organization that still exists, the ABC, the Association of Boxing Commissions, where everybody obeys each other's rules. Let's say a guy is suspended in New York. If he's suspended in New York, he's as good as suspended anywhere else in the country, because that wasn't the case before that. You could be suspended in New York and you say, screw you. And they went and fought in another state. But now all the rules, what we call the unified rules, are all gone over by the Association of Boxing Commissions. And, you know, boxing can be a backwards sport, but because it's ruled by the Association of Boxing Commissions, there's a lot of unity to the sport.
Now, you also are a published author. I didn't realize you wrote a children's book called Ali. Gossip and Nunlap, big publishers, published that children's book. Yeah, but you went on to write Glove Affair, which was an adult book about boxing. Roman and Littlefield published that, Glove Affair, and now you're working on another book called Glove Story. You're a published author.
I am just about done with Glove Story. It's more of my stories. It's not... A lot of people have read my book who are not fight fans, and they called me up and they said, I know nothing about boxing. I bought the book because I'm a friend of yours. I cannot believe these stories were riveting. And I said, yeah, because it's not left to the body, right to the head, then his nose broke, and the blood went all over Don Rosen. No, it's nothing like that. It's just my personal stories. One-on-one with Muhammad Ali, and I could just go on and on and on. But I'm also now working on a book that can affect everybody out there listening. Don, have you ever heard of the term a black widow? And I don't mean the spider.
Yeah, I know, the black widow, yeah. The killer woman who kills her husband and she becomes a widow.
There we go. That's what my book is about. How to protect your loved ones or yourself, which could happen one day. It could happen to you, your wife, your father, your mother. It can happen to anybody you know. So everybody listening to this show, you or somebody you know, somebody you love, can be affected by a black widow, and you would not believe the amount of people who are being preyed upon by the black widow. And the reason they're called the black widow, it's because the black widow female spider, after she mates, she then kills the male.
I know.
Well, the black widow, when they prey upon this unsuspecting guy, they start off as their best friend, and let me console you. You just lost your wife. I'm so sorry. And then they're going out to dinner with them, and they're moving in with them, and then they're having them sign papers in case anything happens to you. I love you, dear. And they sign over everything to them. They push the family out. And, you know, a lot of these people are worth millions, and this black widow then takes everything, the estate, the cars, the bank accounts, everything. That's what they do, and my book is going to be called The Black Widow, The Face of Evil, It Could Happen to You.
Whoa, I'm scared already. Hey, by the way, I was just wanting to make mention, you are currently on Sirius XM Radio, Randy's Ringside on Sirius XM Radio, you and your lollipop. Are there? Give us the hours. When's that on?
Well, I'm on with former heavyweight contender Jerry Cooney every Monday and every Friday from noon till 2 p.m. Eastern Time on channel 156. And then every night of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I'm on my Facebook Live show, Randy's Ringside, which is sponsored. And I've got people watching in New Zealand, Australia, Scotland, England. And to me, Don, this whole thing is one dream that I think I'm just going to wake up one day and say, oh, my God, I just had the most incredible dream that I was an announcer, that I was the commissioner, that I had a great radio show, because this is just not real.
Now,
it is a dream.
I'll tell you what's going to happen. You're going to wake up, and you're going to be back with me at WGBB on Sunday mornings. Back in the 70s.
You know, I wish... I, I think it would be so cool for the gang of us, you and me, and if I could just roll the time machine and bring back the great Bob O'Tone, who was so responsible for me. You know, you and I were these young kids befriended by Bob, and Bob would let us into the station, which led you to become basically, I think you started as a janitor.
I was the janitor,
and worked your way into one of the voices of WGBB, and your career was launched. My career was launched, and all because of the friend that we had in announcer Bob O'Tone, who
Bullet Bob
was just one of the most. Bullet Bob was one of the most amazing men, devoted father, husband, everything.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be like Bob, and I hope Bob is looking down and saying, Randy, I'm really proud of you.
Yeah, we just lost Bob about a year or so ago, and that's too bad. I love Bob O'Tone. He gave me my start, too. He helped me get started as a janitor, and we all get started somewhere. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk wrestling. Rich LoCascio is here, and he wants to talk some wrestling with you. And then I'm going to tell you one quick story about when your daughter was born. I don't know if you remember that. I'll just mention it real quickly right now. You were in the hospital. I was looking at your brand-new daughter. She was, hours old. And I said, just think, in 16 years, she'll be dating. And you said you're going to take that teenager who asks her out on her first date, and you're going to take him, pin him against the wall, and say, listen, if I get any reports that you mistreated my daughter, I'm going to take sandpaper and rip open all the zits on your face. So, do you remember saying that?
Yes, I do. I absolutely remember that. I can't believe you remember that, and you're telling it to a big audience.
Yeah, I remember you said that, and we're looking at your daughter, and she's like hours old. Okay, Randy Gordon, hold in there. WRGN Radio, Hometown Radio, Refresh, the Civic Media Station, 749 now. WRJN Radio, Hometown Radio Refreshed. My good buddy Randy Gordon is here.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and Rich LoCascio is here, and a big wrestling fan, huge wrestling fan. I told him that I was Dr. Don Rosen, the ringside doctor, whenever a wrestler got hurt. You call me, and those stories are yours. But Rich does some of the calling at the announcing at these wrestling matches locally. And so he's the biggest wrestling fan in the world. I used to watch it when I was a kid. Never got into the later years. But we were talking about you were big fans with some of those. Like, did you ever meet Bobo Brazil? Was he in your league there?
He was already... He was older. I did meet him years ago. We never really became close friends. But many of the other big names, like Andre the Giant and... Bruno Sammartino became very good friends of mine.
Did Bobo give you the cocoa butt?
No. But Hacksaw Jim Duggan became a good friend of mine. Captain Lou Albano, a very close friend of mine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Rich LoCascio here. Randy, wanted to talk to you. We were talking about this during the break. WWE announced last night that Paul Heyman... is getting inducted into the 2024 WWE Hall of Fame. I mean, he's highly established in the New York community, was promoting shows at Studio 54, was a photographer for many different promotions, the WWF, Jim Crockett Promotions down in the South.
Yeah.
Can you give me a Paul Heyman story? Because it's just serendipitous that we're having this conversation today.
Paul Heyman, he did it all, and... there was even, I think, one show early on where somebody didn't show up on a smaller show, and he had he was ready to jump into the ring himself and just do whatever it took to get the show on.
Right.
But he was an amazing guy. He did everything. If he had to be an announcer, if he had to be one of the wrestlers, if he had to be a baby face, if he had to be a heel, whatever it took to get the show on, and he certainly belongs in the Hall of Fame, if anybody does.
Absolutely, without question. I mean, his contributions, I think about Extreme Championship Wrestling, ECW, I think about WCW, WWE. I mean, he's still going now as the wise man for the Bloodline.
Yeah. Now, do you remember the name? He was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame a few years ago. He was an executive with the WWE. His name was Rich Herring.
Name doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, but when we get off, you're going to look up his name. He was inducted. Rich Herring, right from the beginning of me being commissioner, was my right-hand man. He was an attorney. He was a court judge. But he had a passion for boxing and wrestling. Mm. And everybody, every good politician, every good businessman needs that right-hand person. And my right-hand person was Rich Herring. When Governor Mario Cuomo got voted out, and I knew that my time in office was very short, because that's how these jobs work. You serve at the pleasure of the governor, and the new governor comes in and makes changes. Rich Herring said, I'm going to buy you some time, because what they're going to do is fire you, they're going to keep him, and then have him train a new commissioner. He said, so what I'm going to do is I'm bailing out. I spoke to Vince McMahon. He hired me at the WWE, which by me leaving is going to buy you extra time. And it did. It bought me about 6-7 extra months.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, Rich Herring went on to book a Hall of Fame career at the WWE. So look up that name, Rich Herring. He went from the Boxing Commission to the Hall of Fame with the WWE.
I will, absolutely. And we talked about Jake the Snake Roberts earlier. I know he's going to be doing a show up in Oshkosh in May. I've had the good fortune of knowing people in the AWA like Frankie the Thumper DeFalco. I know you're talking about Andre the Giant earlier. I mean, Frankie got the opportunity to wrestle him in the WWF years ago. So it's just amazing. The footprint that wrestling's had here in the Midwest with AWA, obviously WWF, WWE in later years, and then you see All Elite Wrestling, what they're doing. So, I mean, wrestling is certainly alive and well.
Oh, it certainly is, and you heard me speak earlier, and I would be remiss if I didn't speak about our own show on SiriusXM Radio, and there's nothing bigger than Busted Open Radio with Dave LaGreca and Bully Ray.
Yep.
What a show it is, and everywhere they go, if they announce that they're going upstate New York, that they're going to Texas, and they're going to be doing the show from some local whatever restaurant or whatever that holds 300 people, they will sell out in minutes, and there'll be 3,000 people waiting outside. I've never seen anything like it. Busted Open Radio on SiriusXM.
Absolutely.
Well, Randy, I got to tell you, I'm so good to talk to you again after all these years. We've talked a few times. You called me in the car. We talked. I just got to tell you, you're like the Cinderella story. I'm so proud of you and your career. I remember when you started, and hearing this other stuff about you being blown up at a gas explosion in the wheelchair, I didn't know that part. I knew you had some scars on you, but I never knew the full backstory on it. Wow. I'm very proud of you, my friend. And I told you as we started, most people start to slow down. You're a little older than I am. People start to slow down. You keep adding on.
Yeah.
And
as a matter of fact, as soon as we get off here, I'm heading to the gym where I'm heading an aerobic class. I teach it.
Oh, wow. And you're getting a boxing stable, which is kind of neat. You got a professional boxer you're managing. You just don't stop. I'm very proud of you, my friend.
Yeah.
And I want you to hold on the phone. Don't go anywhere yet, because I want to talk to you off the air for a sec, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, and don't forget his book, Glove Affair. which is published and now available. And he's going to write Glove Story, which is coming out. And then the Black Widow story. I can't wait to hear that. That sounds like a Twilight Zone episode or an Alfred Hitchcock episode. It's 7:58. I'm Don Rosen. Thank you for joining us here today. Do appreciate it. Always love to have you here. And we'll do it again tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. bright and early here on Civic Media. Hometown Radio Refreshed at 1400 AM, 99.9 FM, 98.1 FM in Kenosha. You keep it here. Earl Ingram coming up next here at WRJN Radio. We'll be right back.